I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Hello, my friends, and welcome to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and here we are together again for another episode. Well, let me tell you. Recently, I talked about my visit to a Trump rally and the excitement and the energy and the power. And then recently, we all had the opportunity to watch the first debate. So what did you think of that first debate? I mean, there's so much going on about the debate. You know, Trump and Biden, and the expectations were extremely high. You know, there was so much anticipation of what it was going to be like, who was going to be strong, who was going to be weak. Was Trump going to come out and, was he going to be presidential? And was Joe Biden going to fumble and stumble and walk into walls and all of that? Well, let's start out on the good side as I'm watching that. Because upcoming very soon, we have the vice presidential debates. And we'll see how this will be handled. But let's talk about the first presidential debate, Trump and Biden. I'm going to say, first of all, I did not like the format. I didn't like the format at all. And I didn't like the way Chris Wallace handled it. Now, I've been not a fan of Chris Wallace's, but I've listened to him on lots of programs. I've listened to him on the news. I've listened to him on his own program. I heard him on lots of radio shows. Mildly reasonable kind of guy, but pretty clear all along the way that he's an anti-Trumper. From what I understand, he's a registered Democrat, which is fine. You know, it could be whatever you register, whatever you want. But when I heard him leading up to the preview of the debate, he said he was going to try to do the best he could and try and solicit good answers from the candidates and see if he could, you know, make it a worthwhile debate. Then we watched that night, and he comes out and he says basically his mission is to be invisible. He was supposed to be invisible in the situation where you wouldn't see him. He would start the question, and then the candidates would go at it, you know, and that was kind of the idea. Even the setup of the format of I'll ask a question, and then you'll have 2 minutes to respond. The other candidate will then have a minute or 2 minutes to respond to what you said, and then it'll be open debate. So shame on me, but I would think open debate kind of means I give my two-minute spiel, you give your two-minute spiel, and then we go at each other about what we just got done saying. Well, it seemed evident after the first couple of exchanges that Chris Wallace, his bias was on display. Now, whether it was on display because, I don't know, purposely that he was doing it, or, it just came out. But it seemed pretty clear to me watching that debate that President Trump was debating two people. Now, let's deal with the behavior of the two candidates. I know Trump wanted to be aggressive. He wanted to go out there hard. But I don't know that he hit the mark, because I think he was overly aggressive. Joe Biden, I thought, was stumbling and bumbling a little bit. I didn't know that he made a really good appearance for himself. Now, we see lots of people responding to what they think about the debate, and they're saying, well, they like that Trump was strong, but the butting in, the interrupting, was very difficult to watch, and it felt uncomfortable to watch that much butting in. The other thing that I think what I saw, and a lot of commentators have talked about it, was that just as Joe Biden was getting on a roll and about to, you know, derail off the tracks and, crash the train with his memory loss or his inability to stay on target, Trump would interrupt him. And that interruption would bring Biden back to his thought pattern. You know, I would hope he would have let him just go off into the weeds, you know, staring into the sky like he sees a UFO on the horizon or something. But he didn't do that. So I thought that was difficult. I thought it was funny to hear all these people saying that, you know, Trump is not very presidential. Trump is not presidential. You know, Joe Biden is a man of character. And it was Joe Biden who started slinging the names, right? Calling the president a clown. The president of the United States, calling him a clown. I didn't like Obama. I would never call him a clown, especially in public to his face. He is the president of the United States. He was my president of the United States, even though I didn't believe in anything that he stood for. So I found that to be interesting that Biden was calling him a liar repeatedly. Just really very disrespectful. Trump, on the other hand, his cutting in and butting in did get irritating after a while. I mean, I talked to a lot of friends, family, colleagues, and they all said the same thing. The butting in really made them uncomfortable that they wouldn't let the guy speak. You know, let him speak. Let him make the stupid mistakes he's going to make. But to just keep butting in like that. Now, why was he butting in? Why was Trump butting in? And I think it was because Chris Wallace did not do a great job as moderator. Because he would bring up a topic, and it looked like he went to the rescue of Joe Biden a few times. When Biden would start getting goofed up or forget or not answer the right question, it looks like he jumped in there and said, you know, that's not the question I asked you, Mr. Biden. Or what is it you're trying to say? So I think he rescued him a few times, which is the unconscious bias that I think Mr. Wallace displayed for all of us. Because he rescued him, and because Trump even said, you know, I guess I'm debating you, to Chris Wallace, because it became obvious that quick. It set Trump off, because Biden was saying absolute lies, and instead of the commentator fact-checking Biden, he just let those things go. And how do you let a big fat lie about you just go floating on by? How do you not interrupt and try and make your peace? And that's where the moderator went wrong. So, as a host here, who hosts program and interviews lots of people, and I'm an interview expert, that's what I do, one of the things I would have liked to have seen was that if you brought up something, you know, you had your 2 minutes, they had their response, even if there's interruption, if it was an appropriate interruption. Like when Biden started talking about the, you know, the Charlottesville thing, you know, and then Trump said to the Nazis they were good people on both sides. And then Trump interrupted him because that's not what he said. That's already been proven that he did not say that. That he was talking about the people who didn't want their statues taken down and some who did. There was good people on both sides of that argument. Not good people on the neo-Nazis or the Klan. You know, that, and everybody knows that's really honest about it. Trump was not saying that the Nazis were good or the skinheads were good people. He was talking about the people who didn't want their statues taken down. And for Biden to throw that out there and for Chris Wallace not to jump in and say, well, Mr. Biden, it's been proven that the president was not talking to those people, but you keep insinuating that every time you bring it up. Why didn't that happen? Okay. Now, as far as President Trump going after Mr. Biden's son, I thought there was a couple of opportunities that were missed. When he brought up his military son and he started getting very upset, I thought Trump was good when he said, you know, I didn't know that young man. I'm talking about Hunter. I thought that was good. I would like to have heard Trump say, listen, your son was in the military. He was an American hero. And I'm going to guess that you were very proud of him. But I think he'd be ashamed of you the way you're lying about things you're saying. I'm saying about the military, because he lied about that, too. That was that Atlantic story. Completely made up, complete nonsense. But Biden threw it out there. And Chris Wallace did not come out and say, well, that's been debunked. But every single time Trump would bring up something about Hunter Biden, Joe Biden would, that's been debunked, that's been proven. By who? Who disproved that? The media? You? Your campaign? Hillary? Hillary said it wasn't true. Right? So, ridiculous. Why wasn't Wallace jumping in there, letting them have their debate? You know, letting them have their debate over the issue once you brought it up. You know, that's the open conversation part. I ask a question, you answer, and then there's an open discussion. He wouldn't allow open discussion. And like I said, every time it looked like Trump was going after Biden, asking the questions Wallace should have asked, it looked like Chris Wallace jumped in to try and save Biden a little bit. And I think lots of people, even colleagues of his, have weighed in and saying, you know, it didn't look good. It wasn't a good, it was not a good job of moderating. You know, and how come it is we never see a moderator like, I don't know, Dan Bongino, or a moderator like Rush Limbaugh? How come we always see these left-wing guys as the moderator? They're the only ones that get to moderate? Why don't we ever have a debate that says we're going to use a clearly conservative reporter instead of all of these continually left-wing people? Wouldn't that only be fair? You know, we're going to have two moderators at every debate. One's going to be a left-wing and one's going to be a right-wing. And they're going to go in and ask questions. So Trump had to debate Joe Biden and he had to debate Chris Wallace. I do think Trump missed a golden opportunity when he said, now, I didn't like the fact that Chris Wallace brought up the whole Charlottesville thing. And would you denounce these right-wing hate groups and the skinheads and the Nazis? Would you denounce that? I don't like that he brought that up because Trump has denounced them. I don't know how many times. How many more times can he be asked this as though he never denounced it? But he brought it up again. And I did think, and then Joe Biden jumped in. So it was two against one. Okay. Which that was pretty obvious at that point. What I think Trump missed a golden opportunity is he could have said, okay, listen, you and you, and I want everybody in this country to hear, especially all the fake news that are out there. I'm going to say this and I want you to write it down. I want you to record it. I want you to say it every single time you want to ask this stupid question of me again. I thoroughly and completely denounce the Ku Klux Klan, the Proud Boys, white supremacy, Antifa, BLM, and all these other hate groups. I denounce all of them. Joe, will you denounce BLM and Antifa? I thought that would have been a good turn of events because at that point, Trump had answered the question that they demanded. And then Biden would be put on the spot. He would have to answer. And could he denounce BLM and Antifa? I don't know that he could. Now, I thought the whole commentary around that, you know, the whole BLM, the concept of BLM, I think everyone can agree with. Of course, Black Lives Matter. All our lives matter, right? So I think we can all jump on board and say that's where we should be talking about. What the actual group of BLM has become, though, is what's harder to define and needs to be investigated further. Are they a left-wing communist front? I don't know. That's what I've heard. But we don't have any reporters to actually do an investigation. You know, if you look on their website, you see some pretty radical things on there. So I would like to have a reporter actually do some reporting and go and find out. Go interview some people and then give us some information. But I guess I'm dreaming on that one, right? Somebody's going to go actually do some reporting in this modern age. So I did think that was a golden opportunity that was missed by President Trump. The Biden constantly calling him, you know, calling the president of the United States a clown or telling him, you know, would you shut up? I guess that appeals to his base, but it also shows the quick to anger Joe Biden. Like he yelled at that guy at the car plant that time, I don't work for you, when he was talking about guns or whatever. So I think the next debate, we have to look at the format. Now, I know now they're talking about, the whoever runs the debates. I can't remember the National Presidential Debate Committee, whatever. Now they're talking about they're going to put some things in place so that they can control the dialogue and control the participants more so that they will behave better in the next one. Well, I think the whole idea is that you have these moderators who are biased and they're biased to the left. It's pretty obvious. You can't miss that in them. But if you just let these two guys go at each other and demand of each other questions and answers, that would be interesting to people. Because if Trump could ask a question and Biden had to answer the question, like when Trump says to him, will you pack the court? And he says, I'm not going to answer because that'll be turned into the whole focus. Well, isn't that one of the focuses of this campaign? Right? If Biden is going to pack the court, if he wins, shouldn't that be something we all know in advance so we can make a proper decision? You know, they're talking about Supreme Court justice, appointments. Well, here's a guy who wants to appoint five more and pack the court. Shouldn't we know that that's his intention? Now, many people might think that's a great idea. Let's get five more conservative or five more liberal justices. And then you see where it goes, right? But Biden wouldn't answer that. Who's your list of judges? Why will you not give us a list of judges, Joe? Trump did that. But at the same breath, they turn around and go, I released my taxes, why don't you release yours? Right? So it's good for one and not good for another when it comes to trying to make these answers. So there's no rules. You know, I think that's part of the problem. I think each candidate, maybe you get to set up a format where each candidate gets to ask the other candidate a specific question, and that candidate has to answer the question, right? So you got 5 minutes here, and Mr. Trump, you get to ask Mr. Biden whatever you want. And then when that's over, Mr. Biden, you get to respond. And then Biden, you get 5 minutes to ask Trump whatever you want. And then they can answer each other. They can actually debate. You know, instead of saying, what do you think about global science? What do you think about global science? As though, you know, that's the most important thing in the world. Let them tear each other apart on what they actually believe. Mr. Biden, you said you're going to raise taxes $4 trillion. Where have you ever seen that work, that it's going to turn into a million new jobs and $3 trillion of income? How does that work? How do you take $4 trillion in taxes out of this economy and expect that it's going to produce, you know, $3 trillion in profits for the government, for people, and we're all going to be better off if we're taxed to death, even though they're saying it's on people over $400,000. You have to look and see. You start taxing people at the high incomes like that, you make it such a drastic tax, as though they just have so much they don't need it, we can take it, which is kind of the idea. That's the way some people look at people, other people's money, is that those people then stop investing that money in places like businesses, in things like building new things for them to live in, boats that they buy, nice cars, or anything that they spend on high-end, right? High-end things. This is common sense. But we don't talk about that. Let's have a philosophical discussion. Mr. Biden, you have said that you support the Green New Deal. How exactly do you think that's going to work if you stop using fossil fuels? How exactly is that going to work? Please take 2 minutes and explain to us how that works. Then, Mr. Trump, do you agree with ending fossil fuels? And if not, tell us how that's not going to cause more pollution in the world. Whatever. You know what I'm saying here, is that we should have a debate where they actually debate ideas. They don't just get to throw one-liners at each other, nonsense. And that's where I think all the yelling and screaming was. You know, you bring up something, you lie about somebody, and then the moderator does not moderate the debate by stepping in and saying, Mr. Biden, what you just said is patently untrue. You know, Trump did not say this. Trump did not do that. Oh, Mr. Biden, Mr. Trump just said your son got $3.5 million, and you're saying it didn't happen. It's debunked. Well, who exactly debunked it? Who debunked it? Hillary Clinton? James Comey? Who actually looked at this? Where is the report that says they actually investigated your son? And they looked at these things, right? Mr. Trump, you say you didn't pay $750. You paid $450 million in tax. Do you have proof of that? You know, where could we see those numbers other than your tax returns, right? Whatever the point may be. I didn't think the debate was the best performance by either candidate, because I don't think it served us, the citizens of the country, very well. I understand Trump's frustration. He's had 3.5 years of fake nonsense thrown at him. We saw all this revelations come out about Hillary. They've declassified things now that President Obama, everybody knew that she was faking up this whole Russia thing. And they went ahead with the Russian investigation of Trump anyway. I can understand his frustration. Why didn't we talk about that? Why wasn't that a topic of conversation? Well, listen, my friends, I would like to hear from you at Pangaro Global, at Pangaro Global. Let me know what you think about the debate as we get ready for the second one, if there will be a second one and a third one. And we have Vice President Pence coming up, and we'll see how Vice President Pence does with Kamala Harris as they get together to discuss the important issues of our nation. This is Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I'll be back in a minute with more Chasing Justice.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world. To unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. We are the vision of the voices. Welcome to the new era in communications. America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Welcome back, my friends, to Chasing Justice here in the America Out Loud Radio Network. So, our president has COVID. The first lady has COVID. A bunch of the people in the White House have COVID. And we see our president, who's in his 70s, apparently looks like he's getting better every day. That's great. I've told you several times, I have an 87-year-old stepfather. Sorry, father-in-law. I want to make sure I get it correct. He's like my stepfather because he's like my father. You know, we love Ted. And he is damned and determined to live his life. Now, I think he takes more chances than he should. And I am certainly one of those kind of people that say, hey, if I decide I want to go somewhere, I should be able to go there. If I want to go to a restaurant and the restaurant wants to be open, then I should be able to go there. If people are afraid of the virus, they should stay home. I don't want to get the virus. I do think the virus is real. You know, all the cliches that people want to throw up out there for people who want to live their life. But it's a reality. You know, Ted takes a lot of chances because he says, I'm 87 years old. I'm not going to spend the last years of my life locked up in a house because I might get the flu. Now, very well could kill him, just like the regular flu could kill him. He's 87 years old and he has some other health issues, but generally he's healthy for an 87-year-old man. We see our president gets COVID, the first lady gets COVID, and the media, of course, loses their mind. The most ugly things people said. Here's the people who say Trump does not act presidential. Well, how do you act when you wish death on someone because they have a disease that we're all supposed to be fighting? Now, I get the whole they want to poke their finger in his eye and say, see, you didn't take masks seriously. See, you didn't take it seriously. I think I remembered a guy saying the other night during the debate, yeah, I carry a mask in my pocket. I wear it when it's appropriate. Well, you know what? So do I. When I go in someplace, I put the mask on. When I'm walking up my street with my dog, I do not wear a mask. When I'm outside, I don't wear a mask unless I'm going into some place, right? Then I'll put it on to go into the place. I'm respectful of other people's concerns and their fears, and that's what a lot of this is. You know, fear will ruin your life. Fear will really make a mockery out of everything that we do. So the president gets COVID, and he immediately goes to Walter Reed, which I think is a smart move. First of all, he's the leader of the free world. Anything that's going to happen in that disease, and I don't know, he's a man in his 70s, it could kill him. You know, we know that. The virus is, it can kill people. You know, there's nothing to joke around about that. So where should he be? In the White House, where they have some ability to do some things to help him medically, but if it really started going bad, wouldn't it be better to be in a hospital where they could do a lot more things? And they have an office there. Like, a lot of people don't know that. There's a presidential wing there that's set up just for the president to go to the hospital. Because people are human, and sometimes they get injuries, they get sick, whatever, and they have to go to the hospital. The president has to be able to conduct the business of president. You're president 24/7, right? When you get sick, you don't not be the president. So you have to keep on going unless you cannot function in the job. So Trump goes to the hospital. Smart move, I think. And we saw, this is the hard part about this, whether you like the guy or you don't, you know, have some human decency about you. The guy got a disease that could potentially kill him. And he's out there trying to support the country, to keep the country open. Because there's lots and lots of people who think, yeah, the virus is dangerous to some people, but we can't stay closed down anymore. We have to open up. People have to go to work. They have to provide for their families. We can't all live on welfare for the rest of our lives. We just can't do it. What if it doesn't go away for 3 years? We're going to stay shut down for 3 years? Impossible. We have got to go back out into the world. Now, what we're seeing with most people in the high 99%, I think of this, let's say 98, because you know, people be jumping up and down. 98% of people who get COVID survive. Now, for that 2% that don't survive, that's a terrible tragedy. But the reality is 98% of everyone who gets this will survive. Now, if I got it and I died from it, boy, I'd be really bummed, right? Son of a gun, it got me and killed me. I could get killed by a bus tomorrow walking across the street. Right? I could get struck by lightning. I could be swimming in the ocean and try and save my children from a riptide and die. These things happen. We cannot prevent life from happening. We can't just all hide in our basement like Joe Biden. We have got to go out and with good precautions and with smart activities, go out. You know, I went out to the restaurant the other night. with another couple that we're friendly with. Now, they've been locked down for months and months and months, just like we have here. You know, we're not out doing crazy things. But we decided to go to the restaurants here because in New Jersey, you're allowed to go in and you have to sit 6 feet apart from everyone. But you have to wear your mask from when you walk in the door of the restaurant till you sit down at your table. Then you can take your mask off. Now, can anybody tell me how that makes any sense whatsoever, that once I sit down, the air I'm breathing is not coming from the table next to me or 7 feet away where those people got no masks on? But if I get up to go to the bathroom, I have to put my mask on because I'm going to walk across the floor. It doesn't make any sense to me. Now, I get the, I understand the argument is, well, if you have the virus and you're walking across the floor, you'll be spreading that virus everywhere and you could give it to people, but not at your table. See, at your table, you're safe. Didn't we talk about this in a recent episode? How damn smart that virus is? It knows when you're sitting at the table following the governor's rule, it can't get you. But if you get up and walk around without your mask, not following the governor's rule, boom. That COVID is on you in a split second. So our president goes to the hospital. And of course, we start to hear the immediate calls that he's probably on death's door. They're lying. He needed oxygen. He said he didn't. And he needed oxygen. And oh my gosh. And he's taking dimethylsorazine. And he's taking this. And and what happened to the hydroxychloroquine? Why didn't it save him? He lied. Hysterics. Hysterics. Because no matter where you stand, no matter what party you are in, that man is the president of the United States. That man is the one who has to make decisions should one of our enemies decide to take action against us somewhere in the world, right? No matter how much you hate him, he's the president who has to make decisions on how to protect America and American interests. So probably the better thing would be to say, gee, I hope the president is okay. Let them take care of him instead of trying to catch a gotcha moment that he's not telling you the truth. He's lying to you. He's trying to get away with another lie. He's really more sicker than he is. What do you think that message goes out to our enemies who don't start to say, wow, the president is much sicker. Maybe this is a moment for us to make a move, to do something we've been waiting to do. And that hurts all of us. You know, It's just shocking to me. And I brought this up how many thousands of times now here in Chasing Justice. I didn't care for Mr. Obama's policies, right? I didn't care for Mr. Obama's policies. He was still my president. I still prayed for him every night at our table for dinner. We prayed for the president. We prayed for the soldiers. We prayed for all the people out there doing right by everybody else in our country. And I wanted Mr. Obama to be healthy, and I wanted him to be clear thinking, and I wanted him to make the best decisions he could make, especially in a time of a crisis or an emergency. I didn't wish death upon him. I didn't wish he got sick. I didn't wish somebody killed him. He was my president, whether I agreed with his policies or not. That's how the system works. We are so gone from that now. We are so gone from that situation. So Trump's in the hospital, and he's starting to feel better. Now, one of the things that the whole world looks at is when an American president is down and out. Remember, well, some of you might be too young to remember, when Ronald Reagan got shot and he's in the hospital. Everybody thought, they didn't realize at the time how serious his wounds were. He came very close to dying, right? But when he was feeling better, he got up and he went to the window and he's waving to everyone. He wasn't just waving to say hi to the people in the parking lot. He was showing the rest of the world, all the rest of the world leaders who may want to do bad things to America, that the president of the United States is fine. Don't try anything. Well, that's exactly what President Trump was doing. He wanted people to see, I'm not in the hospital dying like the media is telling you. I'm not waylaid because they're giving me all kinds of these experimental drugs and I can't function. I'm on death's door. He wanted people to see, he wanted our enemies to see, he is still quite functional. And therefore, don't try anything. People that don't get that, it has to be because they choose not to get it. Because like I said, whether I approved of his policies or not, Obama was my president. And whether you like Trump or not, Trump is your president. So we should, in my opinion, we should pray for the president and his wife, and all the people that have COVID, right? that they heal quickly and that we get a vaccine and we can put this virus in the rearview mirror of our lives, because look what it has done to our country and to our world. Now, you can see, if you care to see, and that's the thing, you know, people can only open their eyes as much as they're willing to open their eyes, what has happened because of this shutdown. And you have to say, I would think, logic would dictate that you'd have to say there is a motivation, a political motivation for some people to keep it locked down and keep us shut down, to hurt the only thing that they thought they couldn't overcome with Trump was the economy. Well, they did that. They did it very well. And it's having that effect. And that's why you're seeing now we're hearing we're going to close things down again. We're going to shut things down again right before the election. Is that really making a difference? Well, you can find experts. You know, that's what we all want, science and experts, but only if they're the right ones. Only if they're the right science and experts that agree with your political point of view. If they're not, then they're not really science or experts, right? But there's lots of science and scientists and experts out there that'll tell you the mask doesn't do that much good. Matter of fact, the lockdown doesn't do that much good. Sure, it slows down the spread. And wait, let's go back to March. Isn't that what we're supposed to do? What did I hear about the number 15? What did that have to do with this whole lockdown? We needed to lock down for 15 days so that we could make sure we had hospital beds available. Because I got to tell you, remember, it was scary. We didn't know where it was going to go. It seemed like it was turning into this crazy epidemic where hospitals were filling up. I remember the Governor Cuomo on TV screaming he had no ventilators and people were going to die without them, right? Because we didn't know at the time. We've now got a lot of experience with this disease, and we can see that it's not exactly as bad as we thought it was. We realize also at the same time it potentially is dangerous for lots of people. So why aren't we doing the right thing? Are we still playing these political games? I think to a point we really are, because the election is getting closer and closer. Apparently, they're giving the president lots of different kinds of medications, experimental things. You know, the ones that they're screaming at?
If he's going to come up with a vaccine, I don't trust it. He better take it first.
Well, I bet he's taking a lot of things first, because you know what? He trusts the medical scientists and the doctors he has around him, and he doesn't want to die. He wants to beat this thing. He's being a leader, right? Now, I don't know how altruistic that leadership is of taking that medicine and how much self-preservation is involved, but the fact is, he's apparently taking it. And if it works on him and he doesn't grow a third arm, right, then maybe we can say maybe some of that stuff is good. Maybe we should look at it a little closer. Maybe we can be a little more trusting in it. And for all the people that are out there saying, you know, they would not trust a medicine, what, are you kidding? Do you think AstraZeneca or whichever one of these gigantic pharmaceutical companies are doing this because Trump is pressuring them to do it and they're going to come up with a vaccine that's going to kill people or make you sick or make you grow a third arm? You think they're going to really go ahead and do that just because Trump pressured them? They're going to give up their whole company? They're going to kill you? People, you're out of your mind if that's what you think. You need to take a deep breath. The hatred that goes on here. You talk about people who are supposed to be tolerant. And the hatred is just unbelievable. Let's take a deep breath. The guy's got a potty mouth and he's rude sometimes, but take it easy. Holy moly. All right? So Trump goes out and he waves at people to show the world that he's okay, that he's still the president. This is something we should all applaud. We should all be saying, hey, the rest of the world, see that? Our guy is okay. Our president is okay. He's not someone to be trifled with. Because you know what? That really means we are not people to be trifled with. Don't try something now. We are not in a moment of weakness. So I got that off my chest. Thank you very much. Now listen, I have a column that I'm hoping gets up on the AmericaOutloud.com platform pretty soon. It's a working title right now called The 4th of November. Obviously, the 4th of November is the day after the elections. And I pose some questions in there. It's really kind of a different kind of a column for me because I normally like to, you know, make a statement and then give my opinion about something. And in this one, I think really my opinion is being drawn out because I'm not really sure how things are going to go. And that's the questions that I'm asking. I'm asking you and I'm asking myself in that column, what is going to happen on the morning of November 4th? Do we wake up to jubilation and excitement that a new president has been elected you know, part of the tradition of our country, the thing that makes our country great, that we, the people, go out and vote for our leadership? Or are we going to wake up to the horror of flames and violence and people destroying things because it didn't go the way they want? Now, I'm not saying which side is going to do which. You decide which side would do which. But my question in that article really is to ask those questions. You know, what's it going to be like on the morning of November 4th? Will we even know? Will we have any idea who the president actually is on the morning of November 4th? You know, the way we're looking at things right now is we have these mail-in ballots, right? Now, I don't know about you. Every time I hear on the news, there's absolutely zero evidence of any fraud. But every day, I'm hearing on my local news that, you know, a guy with his wife living in a house with their three-year-old daughter got 9 ballots for people who used to live in their house or for their dead relatives who used to live with them. And they got all these ballots. All they got to do is check off the boxes and send them back. Right? We see that there's groups of people in our country who are trying to do away with the signature confirmation line. So basically, you can have 2 different signatures on your documentation, and we can't really pay attention to that. Why would that be? I mean, that's a common sense question. Why would you want to have something where you have 2 different signatures? Right? What would that indicate if you had 2 different signatures? 2 different people? I don't know. And wouldn't that be inappropriate? We're seeing example after example of ballots being dumped in the garbage, not being delivered, over-delivered to some places. So we may have no idea on that morning of November 4th who the President of the United States is. It could drag on for months. It could get to the point that what happens if we have to drag this into the courts? Isn't it going to make a difference then who the lawyers are involved and who the judges are involved? And suddenly, unlike, you know, Chief Justice Roberts, who says that there are no Democrat judges or Republican judges, then why are we fighting so hard right now over Amy Coney Barrett? Because she's a right-wing judge. No, there's not. Ask Justice right over there, who says there's no such thing as a right-wing or a left-wing judge. Right? But in reality, the rest of us know, yeah, there are. And that's why we vote for certain people. So that when those people are in charge, the kind of judge we want is the ones they're going to appoint. So we have no idea what it's going to run into the court. Is it going to be another Bush versus Gore? Is the Supreme Court going to have to put a stop to the counting and more counting? How many times will we see in a place where one candidate or the other wins, suddenly, before it's over, oh, I happen to have these 40,000 ballots in the trunk of my car. I forgot to bring them in. Here they are. And they're all for one candidate. Right? Is that impossible? Does that not happen? Have we not seen these things? So why do they keep telling us that there's absolutely no evidence whatsoever of fraud in these elections? Why would we do this to ourselves? Why would we go to this system? Do you see how the fear and the panic of this COVID came in just at the perfect time? Just at the perfect time to change all... Well, people can't go to the ballot. They can't go to the ballot. Well, of course, they can go to the abortion clinic. They can go there. They can go to the restaurant now. They can sit down there. They can go to casinos, and they can pull the levers there. But they can't go to the voting places. We can't have them in voting places. Think about this, ladies and gentlemen. Why would this take place? And I'm not a conspiracy guy, but that doesn't mean people don't really do things. I want us to think about it. I'll be back in a minute with more Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep, but it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
All right, all right, all right.
Welcome back to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and I am thrilled to be here. Now, you know, every once in a while I go off on a tangent and I get myself upset and I get caught up into things. I'm really a very relaxed kind of guy. You know, I take all things in stride. You know, when things are bad, you have to be confident that at some point they're going to change and they'll be good again. And when they're good, you should enjoy them. Because you know that at some point the good's going to stop and it's going to get bad again. So the whole idea is when you see these highs and these lows, if you're living on the high or the low, you're going to have some problems. The whole idea is to kind of live in that trough in the middle, okay? When it's good times, enjoy the good times. When things are tough, have confidence that they'll get better. Which is where I want to get a couple finishing thoughts about the column. And again, my working title for the column to be up on the AmericaOutLoud.com platform is the 4th of November. Because I'm really concentrating on the day after. You know, so in the last segment I was saying, we might not even know who the president is. It might end up going to the courts to decide. In the meantime, okay, because we know a lot of places say your vote, as long as it's postmarked by Election Day, they have until like the 10th of the month or 7th of the month, you know, till 10 days after the election day, as long as it's postmarked, to actually count that vote. So that means all the votes can't be counted everywhere in general, you know, until, what, the 13th of November? So that's a full week. But in the meantime, do you think that's going to stop the media from reporting, you know, exit polls, man on the street polls, they're going to come up with their own conclusion polls, you know, who's winning, who's way ahead, who's winning in the battle states? Because I think if you look at the polls right now, they're saying that Joe Biden is up in the entire country. Joe Biden is the guy. That's it. It's over. Basically, the election is over. Joe Biden has already won. It's just a matter of the voting, real or fake, whatever. And that's it. America has had enough of the orange man, and we are going for civility and the decency of Joe Biden, which think about that, okay? We're going to go for that, and we're going to be done with the orange man, and we're going to move on from all this, and everyone's going to get along great. There's going to be equality and love, and all the violence is going to stop. It's going to be great. Now, I heard something the other day. I wish I could remember where it was. It was on one of the news stations, and they said they were looking at polls that took place in October, presidential polls, going all the way back to Ronald Reagan. And I believe the statistic that I heard was that in every single poll, except for one, the Republican was losing, and losing badly. There was only one poll that showed Ronald Reagan ahead in October in one of his elections, probably the second one when he almost took every state. All right, so if you think about that, that means that every single poll since Ronald Reagan, since the 1980 election of Ronald Reagan, has been wrong. But yet we're standing on it. We're stomping up and down on it. Now, for people who don't know how polls are done, you would think that we say, okay, there's two candidates, right? There's Republicans and there's a Democrat candidate. Now, of course, there's some independent people that are involved in there. You got the, you know, some different parties that have minor candidates, which we always do. You know, you run for office. You would think that basically they say, let's ask 100 people or let's ask 1,000 people, who are you voting for president? And if you ask 1,000 people, 500 Republicans and 500 Democrats that are likely voters, people that voted in the last couple of elections, you might get a pretty accurate poll. I talked to 500 Republicans, 500 Democrats, and this is what I found out. But that's not how polls go. They look at by the number of registered people in each party, and the Democrat Party has more people registered in it nationwide than the Republican Party does. You know, this goes back to the day when the Democrats were, you know, the people of the people, you know, people for the people. They were out there for the people, for the working people. So a lot of people were Democrats, traditional Democrat people, and they've kept their registration. I know there's lots of Democrats that they stay Democrat in the party because, you know, what the hell? They're not really involved in the party. They're just a Democrat, but they vote for the Republican candidate, right? I know lots of people that do that. And that's really a skewed data set. So if you take 38% of registered Democrats and 22% of registered Republicans, and you ask them those questions with a smattering of, you know, independents in the middle there, and you ask them that, And guess what? The Democrat comes out ahead because they say statistically, that's more correct. Now, maybe I am completely wrong. Maybe that is the right way to do it. And I would say it was if they didn't get it wrong every single time since 1980, except for one time. So something is wrong here, either the way I'm thinking about it or the way they do these polls. And why would you skew a poll? What's the purpose of a poll? Well, a poll is really to be a snapshot of how people feel about any given issue. You know, should we allow UFOs to land in the park? Okay, well, 52% of people say no, and they win, so the UFOs can't land in the park. They got to go land somewhere else. You know, we take a poll because we want to understand general feeling or get an opinion. Should we raise taxes or not? 73% of people say no. Okay, that informs you that 73% of your population, a majority, do not want the taxes raised. Do something else to raise revenue, right? When it comes to the presidential polls, because we know that the media is corrupt in many instances, we've seen it. We've all seen it. We know the media is corrupt. They use polls to exert pressure on people to make it seem a certain way. And I saw this in real life yesterday. I was speaking to a very conservative man, someone who I respect, very intelligent man. He's very pro-Trump. We were talking about the election. And basically, he said to me, you know what? I've been listening and all the polls and everything, and it's over. Biden's going to win. It's as simple as that. You know, I mean, it's why even go out and vote? Why even waste the time, you know, to take that ballot and fill it out and then go drop it off? It's obvious he's going to win. I heard that, and it was very informative to me. Now, like I said, this is a very conservative person, very positive, very smart, and very pro-Trump. And I said, why do you think that? He says, everything you hear. I mean, this debate went so bad. Biden, you know, wiped him up because he kept interrupting. And I had to say, listen, let's take a deep breath here. Take a deep breath. Let's look at things here. Who's reporting that to you? Who is telling you that information? Who's giving you the information? See, one of the most important things we can ever do is to understand who's giving us the information. And then you have to ask the question, why would they give us that particular information? Is it just to be honest? Is it to be truthful? Is it because that's their mission in life to give you the information? Or is there a bias involved? Now, this goes for anybody. This goes for anybody and everybody. So when you say to yourself, okay, well, how could you say that they're biased? Why would you consider that they're biased? Then you have to look at the evidence. You see how this is a logical string of activity? Now you got to go back and say, Mary Ellen Smith, hanging over the fence, has told me for the last 7 years that Bob, who lives on the other side of my yard, Bob's having an affair with someone. Then she told me Bob's getting his taxes audited. And then she told me Bob's going to lose his house. And then Bob's going to lose his wife. And Bob's going to lose his job. And she knows all of this because she has inside sources. And then Bob never loses his house. Bob never gets divorced. Bob never runs off with his girlfriend. None of these. Bob doesn't get audited and sent to jail for filing his taxes wrong. So next time Mary Ellen hangs over the fence to tell me something, I have to say to myself, why would I listen to her? She's been wrong every single time. Now, maybe I should do a little further research. Now I talk to, Gladys, who lives behind the other side. I say, what's up with this Mary Ellen over here? And with this thing with Bob? Oh, she hates Bob. Oh, she's always hated Bob. Before you moved in, they were having screaming fights in the street. She hates him. Oh, now I see why she would say all these negative, backwards things. She's trying to influence me so that I won't like Bob. Now, that's a roundabout way. Did you follow me all through that? This is how you investigate something. You can't just listen to the words or to see the pictures of what someone's giving you. You have to think about it. You have to look at the source. Where are you getting the information from? What is their motivation? Where is their source of information from? Right? How many times have we seen, let's just take this coup d'etat attempt against President Trump. We were told that the FBI, CIA, and all these other intelligence units were doing this investigation because they had pretty good proof that Trump was going to be compromised by the Russians, that he was involved with the Russians, he was getting Russian help, and he was asking for it. And we had all kinds of information come out, didn't we? The dossier, turns out, like we're just finding out very, very recently, as these things come out, drip, 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 that not only did everybody that was involved, that was telling us these stories about what Trump was doing, knew the dossier was created by a guy getting the information from Russian operatives, was paid for by Hillary Clinton, and that Clinton wanted to come up with something to take everyone's attention off of her email nonsense. And the entire government apparatus went along with that. Corruption. Corruption. Right? So you'd have to ask the source there. What's the source of this information? What's the motivation? Jim Comey, the former FBI guy, right? He was just testifying the other day. He wrote a book. Remember that? He wrote a book all about what he knew about Trump and the Trump investigation and how bad Trump, everything bad about Trump. Then he testifies the other day. And he said, I believe the number came out 236 times during his testimony. He said, he doesn't know, he doesn't remember, he doesn't recall. Well, how is it he could write a book that he remembers all those other facts, but the other things that show it was a hoax and he knew all about it, he doesn't remember any of that. I don't know any of that stuff. Where is there any credibility left for him? Just based on that alone, where is there any credibility for him at all? You know, so if you went out and bought his book and you said, man, this is the guy that was on the inside and he knew, you'd have to ask yourself now, why wouldn't he remember these other things that are not only equally important to the things he put in his book, but they are more important than the things he put in his book because it shows the conspiracy that took place. Why doesn't he know anything about that? Isn't that funny? He doesn't know anything about it. And where's the media stories going? Where are them looking at this and going, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense. Could you imagine if President Trump or anybody in his administration had to go answer questions and 200 plus times they said, I don't know, I don't remember. And everybody just like, oh, well, I guess he doesn't remember. That's good enough. Would that be good enough, do you think? No, it would not be good enough. That would be a big problem, you know? So this is where we see, this is how this corruption upends everything. So I want you to look for that column towards the end of the week. And like I said, the working title right now is the 4th of November. I don't know, I might change it as I add a line or two here and there. But that's really what it's asking. It's asking you, what do you think is going to happen on the morning of November 4th? Will we know who the new president is? If we don't, how long is it going to take for us to determine a new president? Are there going to be hordes and hordes of lawyers filing lawsuits in multiple jurisdictions to say, you have to count these votes, or no, you can't count those votes, right? How about you have to keep on counting, or no, you must stop counting? How many lawsuits are there going to be that are going to have to be heard in so many different jurisdictions? Why do we do this to ourselves? When we can do so many other things in the middle of this pandemic, we can't go and vote the regular way everyone has always done. Push the lever, push the button. Right? The whole Chad thing is stupid because people can't push a Chad. And that's why we had that debacle in Florida. But push a lever. You know, there has to be a better way. My next bit of evidence is if we say this is not the first election we're having trouble, right, with because of how to count the votes and which votes counts and which votes don't count. How come between now and the next presidential election 4 years from now, do you think we'll have this thing solved? Do you think there's a commission working on it right now to figure out there has to be a better way to do this? I mean, we can go to Amazon and buy something from around the world and it ends up on our front door the next day. There are ways to do things accurately. There are ways to be sure who it is. And that's the other thing. Why would we not want to know who is voting? Why would we want not to protect such a vital right we have in America to say that, hey, only the people that should be voting should be voting? Why would we want people to vote 2 and 3 times? Why would we want people to fake it up? Why would we want people who are not citizens to vote? Now, that comes down to two answers. One, if they're going to vote for the people that you like, that's pretty good. That's a whole bunch of extra votes. What if they're voting against the person that you like? Right? Could you imagine If all the people that were going to vote that are not supposed to vote or are going to cheat or do whatever, what if they all voted for Trump? Would you be happy with that? Or would you lose your mind if you found that out? Well, I think you'd lose your mind, which is why people, a lot of people who think that a lot of the fraud and the fakery and the trickery and the bad votes are going to go towards Biden are upset, because then it's not a fair election. And it doesn't matter which way it goes, whether it's for your candidate or the other candidate. Any fraud damages your right and my right. Right? You see, that's the thing. It doesn't matter which way the election goes. And I don't mean that. I mean, it does matter. Elections have consequences, obviously. Amy Coney Barrett. My point being, for each one of us, as a citizen of the United States, we should have fair and free and transparent elections. We shouldn't have these kind of problems. Why are these kind of problems? Go back to the source. Who benefits from subterfuge and from all of this non-transparency and potential fraud? And who benefits from people who are not citizens voting, right? Those are the questions you have to ask if you want to get true answers. And the fact that the minute you bring that up and say, I don't know, something horrible, like you should have a voter ID. You must be a hater. You are a hater. Why would I be a hater? If you drive a car, you have to have that. You have to have a Social Security card to collect benefits. People that collect anything from the government have to identify who they are. Why, if you try to go to some kind of a concert, you got to have a ticket that shows who you are, right? You got to go 14 different places. You want to go to an airport. Well, I guess a lot of the people in our country can't fly airplanes if they don't have identification, because they're not allowed to get on the plane without positive picture identification. So what do we say? Those people never fly anywhere, or they don't travel anywhere, or they're not capable of traveling? No. Why is it only when it comes to voting, the most important thing we have as citizens, our right to vote for our choice, for our destiny, That can be totally unsecured. That can be, you know, hey, we're not gonna, you know, look too hard into that. Does anybody really believe that of all of these paper ballots that get sent in, and we do see anecdotal, I don't know if you want to say it's anecdotal, but we are seeing many instances on the news where they're reporting, like I said earlier, a guy and his wife and his 3-year-old gets 9 ballots at his house. He could fill them out and he can just mail them in. And they're going to count them. Do you really think they're going to cross-reference every one of those ballots against death records to see who's a dead person voting? They don't do that now. We know that in every election. There's lots of fraud, right? What about Chicago? That's the big joke, right? The dead people vote all the time. Well, do you think they're going to go back and they're going to look through these records and they're going to try and cross-match, and they don't want to match the signature because, hey, as long as it's there, right? It's a signature. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a problem for our country. This is very, very serious. And on the morning of November 4th, we're going to see a brand new way to go. I don't know which way it's going to go. I'm praying that traditional America, that our American spirit, our DNA, guided by a God that loves us, is going to help us get through all of this. So in the meantime, I want to say best of health to the President and the First Lady and everyone in the country who has COVID. I hope our scientists can help wipe this thing out, and we can all be healthy and get along and live in freedom. So until we meet again, this is Lieutenant Joe for Chasing Justice saying, be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem.